Welcome to the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast from the University of Birmingham. In each edition, we hear from an expert in a different field who gives us insider information on key trends, upcoming events, and what they think the near future holds.
Today, we're with Dr. Chris Allen, and Chris is a research fellow in the Institute of Applied Social Studies. He does a lot of work around diversity and minority communities, but today we're going to talk about a big area of his work, which is Islamophobia. It's been in the news a lot recently, and also Chris has got a new book out this month called Islamophobia. Yeah. Welcome, Chris.
Hi.
So to start off with, what are we talking about? What constitutes Islamophobia, and how do we know it's present in Britain today?
In terms of setting out a definition, a sort of rule of thumb, I would say that it's around sort of the unfounded hostility and hatred that's shown towards Islam and to Muslims as individuals. And that can cut across a whole range of different things, from the way that we speak about Muslims and Islam to the way that we sort of approach them, the sort of perceptions we have, and also in more sort of institutional sort of forms as well, in terms of sort of prejudices and practices which clearly discriminate against Muslims in the social setting.
Now, there's been a lot in the news recently about the potential building of a mosque near Ground Zero, but you've been looking at mosque building in the UK and the controversy here.
Yeah, I mean, we've been looking at sort of the issue of mosques in the UK for the past couple of years now. And I think that one of the interesting things as a start point is really to look at the British Social Attitude Survey, which was published earlier this year. And just over half, 55% of all people in the UK said that they would be bothered by the construction of a large mosque in their community. Compared to a church, a large church, only 15% would be concerned to have that in their community. Now, I don't think that in itself highlights that the British public are Islamophobic per se. But I think that when you look at that in context, so 52% of people in the UK see Britain as being deeply divided along religious lines. And 45% of those people think that religious diversity has had a detrimental impact on the way that we are in today's Britain. And I think that this has really begun to come to the fore through the issue of mosques and the development and building of mosques in and around the UK. And it's one of those issues as well that's really gone sort of under the radar. And so attacks on mosques, the destruction of mosques, has really been something which has been occurring, but doesn't really actually make the news, and it doesn't really make the headlines in the same way that the New York Ground Zero mosque, for example, did. And so in the West Midlands, for example, in the past 6 months, there was the Cradley Heath Mosque, which had an arson attack. And in Langley Green, there was a building which was up for conversion to an Islamic centre and a mosque, and that was actually destroyed. And so the Muslim community in Langley Green are actually looking for a new site. And of course, we also have the Dudley Mosque, which has made a lot of headlines. Given that it's been going on for over 10 years now and there's still not even planning permission being granted for the mosque, it's interesting the way that just the idea or the notion of building a mosque in a certain place can cause deep divisions and also bring scrutiny to the area and to the Muslim communities in those areas as well.
As part of your work looking at who is opposing these mosques, you've been looking at the far right or the more extreme groups in Britain and found that there's a kind of new face to the far right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that in the general election this year, when the BNP were largely defeated, I think that a lot of people thought that they'd actually defeated the far right. But I think that what's more worrying is the fact that whilst the BNP has kind of been marginalised, the real new face to it is the English Defence League, or the EDL. And if we link that back up with the issues around sort of mosques, for example, the EDL have been very active in areas where mosques have been proposed, and particularly in Dudley in the West Midlands, where they've undertaken two marches and also staged a rooftop protest on the site where the proposed mosque is planned. And I think that they've really got some new ways of working that kind of challenge the sort of way that we understand the far right. So one example is that they are very well linked in terms of social networking. So if you look at sort of Facebook, for example, the EDL have a very strong presence. They not only have a presence that marks them out as being the EDL, for example, and their various divisions around the country have different pages, but they also have campaign groups. So sort of opposing Dudley Mosque, and you'll find that the EDL are running those pages, and there's up to 15 to 20,000 people actually supporting those. So a real sort of groundswell in a new sort of area. The other thing with the EDL as well is that they really are beginning to challenge some of the perceptions of the far right. So traditionally, the far right have been discriminatory towards all minority groups to sort of, you know, I think issues around sort of white supremacism, nationalism, and so on. And with the EDL now, such as when they marched in Birmingham, when they marched in Bradford, and in forthcoming marches as well, they'll be marching behind banners which say Black and White Unite. They also have sort of, they would carry Israeli flags, which again goes against a lot of sort of traditional far-right activity. And also in terms of their divisions, the way they organise themselves, the EDL have a Sikh division, they have a Jewish division, and they also have a gay and lesbian division as well. So again, really challenging those sort of ideas around what the far-right is and how it actually operates.
So we've got gays and lesbians joining together to protest against Islam?
There is a sort of a much more liberal form of, I don't want to say Islamophobia, but a liberal resistance to Islam and Muslims as well. And a lot of that comes from some of those sort of theological interpretations which interpret Sharia law, for example, in terms of homosexuality as being a sin, as being something that's punishable by death. And obviously that's not something that all Muslims subscribe to, but it's some of the more sort of extreme interpretations of Islamic theology. So it kind of fits within that sort of idea. You know, if you're building a coalition against Islam, you're building a coalition against Muslims, then it's very useful for groups like the EDL to tap into those as well. I think the EDL have an angels division, which is the name of their women's division. So again, they would be looking at their sort of and trying to badge that up really as sort of resisting the oppression of women that they see that Islam is sort of promoting.
Another thing that's been looming large in the news has been the threatened burning of Qurans over in the States. But there's been some Quran burning going on over here, albeit more quietly.
Apparently two guys outside of Newcastle have just been recently arrested for burning Qurans. They decided to burn the Quran, video it, and then post it on YouTube. And in the last day or so, I believe that the same has occurred in France as well, where a couple of people have done the same and posted on YouTube. What we're seeing is that there are various different things that we can do which will incite some sort of reaction. And so 40 people in the US that are around a very small church can actually now get global publicity and sort of have global reaction and responses and make this into a really large global issue just through the sort of the way that the world works now, through the media, through the sort of globalized networks, through the internet and so on. I think that if somebody is burning the Quran just outside Newcastle, whilst it's not acceptable, I think that there are some things that we should say is, let's not overblow this, you know, let's not make this into a big issue, because it's these sort of very small things that cause deep divisions amongst the communities in those areas.
So as we're coming to the end of this podcast, tell us, Chris, what's on your horizon for the next 12 months or so in this area? What are the things that are coming up that we may see in the news?
Well, at the moment, we're currently working towards the establishment of an all-party parliamentary group on Islamophobia and anti-Muslim hate crimes. We're looking at submitting the proposal, which I'm currently working on at the moment, in November. And we're hoping that shortly after Christmas, so in the start of 2011, we really are going to see the formation of this group, which will be a significant breakthrough for everybody. And I think the other thing in 2011 is the census. And whilst it'll take a few years for the findings to come out from that, we should really be aware that there's going to be some changes. So in the 2001 census, for example, there was 73% of the population said they were Christian. I think that there's been awareness that there's a difference between identification and sort of practice. And so I think that you'll see the numbers of Christians reducing. And I think that through sort of immigration and through sort of higher birth rates, the number of Muslims will actually increase. And I think that that sort of data, those sort of headline figures, will be very easy to be tapped into by those from the far right, for example, that will say, this is further evidence of the Islamification of Britain, this is the sort of Islamic invasion underway, and here's the evidence for that. So I think that we need to be aware of that and maybe preempt that and try and be a little bit more rational about how we understand the statistics when they finally come out.
Dr. Chris Allen, thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks so much.
And good luck with your book.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks so much.
This podcast and others in the series are available on the Ideas Lab website, www.ideaslabuk.com. On the website, you can find out how to email us with comments, questions, or suggestions for future topics for the podcast. There's also information on the free support Ideas Lab has to offer to TV and radio producers, new media producers, and journalists. The interviewer for the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast was Lucy Vernal, and the producer was Andy Tootell.